Tamara Thomas, editor-in-chief of UrbanHealthToday.com, part of the DocWire family of medical news sites, and I want to thank you for tuning in to Urban Health Weekly. Our goal each week is to keep you informed of the latest in health and medical news right from today's headline. It's time to empower yourself with open conversations about your medical care with news that matters to you. So are you ready? Let's get started. Hey, welcome to Urban Health Weekly. I'm here with my friends Louie and Jackie, and we're about to get started.
I have a quick story this morning.
Okay.
All right. So here's my question. When is a little public embarrassment a good thing? No. All right. Well, let me tell you what happened this morning. So I was feeling very, motivated this morning. So I got up really early and I went to the Y and I went swimming. And they've got a really good system. It's just lap lanes. There's 8 of them. And you have to sign in and they keep your, your records so they know who's who. And it's only for people doing laps. So I went in and I did my 20, 30 minutes. And when I went to get out of the pool, let's preface by saying that I'm a little bit top heavy. So I wear a 2-piece that's actually like a harness, like a special, like, upper body that covers, and then I wear like a
you wear a 2-piece for swimming. You don't wear full 1-piece.
Well, it looks like a 1-piece because it's very, very covered. So I wear it for modesty. It's just 2 separate pieces with like the top comes all the way down and goes to your waist, and then the bottom is a swim skirt because I like a swim skirt. So it hides a multitude of sins. Yes.
Got it.
So basically I did my laps. I was feeling pretty good about myself. And when I went to get out of the pool, my bottom swim skirt stayed in the pool. And I came out.
Right, our very own.
Oh my, that was
no, but she topped it.
That was
well, bottom line, I turned around, I said, oh my God. And I said, and nobody saw because everybody is staring at the bottom of the pool at the lines, but the lifeguard saw. And I said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And she was very cool. Thank God she's female. She's very cool. And I go, oh my God, I lost weight. Yes. I go, I'm so sorry. I lost weight. My bathing suit just came right off, And she goes, did you see that? She goes, oh, I saw that. And then I walked over to her all like embarrassed. And she just was really sweet. She goes, nobody saw. And, they have no cameras because they have a relay. So thank God for that.
Right.
And nobody saw, just her. And she said, time to get a new smaller swimsuit. So I was very pleased.
How much weight did you lose?
I think, let's see. At some point, I've lost at least 60 pounds.
Oh my God. First of all, congrats.
Yes. Thank you.
Amazing.
Whole food plant-based. That's what did it. So she was very cool lifeguard, and maybe it's time to get a smaller swimsuit. So
maybe it's time to get a smaller. It's definitely look, congratulations.
Thank you.
But girl. You should have then had changed your.
I'm afraid to go back to the pool, quite frankly. But all right, it's just the one lifeguard.
You're very proud of yourself that you. That's fantastic.
That was just a full-on moon of everybody in the whole building who was looking.
Which
hopefully, gladly, nobody wasn't. That's all they can say.
I'll tell you, as a person who does laps. Well, first of all, normally I would look and say, wow. And then, mentally, I would not react. I would just act like this didn't happen.
Right.
But the 18-year-old or 14-year-old that lives inside my head would say, so that's that. But I will say that as a person who does laps all the time, you really focus on what you're doing. And
yes, the lap, the lines at the bottom of the pool. You're just doing and getting it over with. Nobody's paying attention.
I could have an alligator next to me and I wouldn't even know.
That's right. Me too. So that's what I know. There was like very serious lap swimmers there. Nobody cared. Yeah, nobody watched.
You go zen when you're doing that. And you go zen after, I would say at like 2 laps, you go zen. And anything could happen. And then
a lot of people bump their head because they don't even realize they get to the end of the lane.
I do.
I've done that. Yes.
Yep.
But congratulations, honey. You're a worst problem to have in life. I mean, it was embarrassing, yes. But that's great.
Yeah, that lifeguard and I had a moment. We laughed. We had a good laugh. So.
Well, thank goodness it was a woman. Else
I
would
have. I agree. Otherwise, I think I might not have gone back.
Are you still doing an intermittent fasting, by the way?
Well, right now I'm in between intermittent fasting. So I'm just trying to not eat so much like past 7 p.m. But because I've switched the whole food plant-based, I'm sort of taking a break from the intermittent fasting. And I am doing that prolonged fasting period where it's like 5 days, that special diet,
right.
5 days a month. But I'm putting it off because it's really like you're a tremendous biatch while you're fasting. And I prefer to do it when my little guy is away with his dad for like a long weekend so that he misses that.
You can be a biatch by yourself.
That's right. And also you really can't do anything. You have to eat like the certain like special foods. And it's like a proprietary fast and where they like provide you the foods and then you just do like, it's really micronutrients, no macronutrients. Mm-hmm. And it's got like no fiber. And so it's like extremely convenient.
Are you biatchy the whole 5 days, or is there like a period? Is it like peak and then you calm down, or how?
That's a very good question. I think it's day two. Let's see. I think day three and five are the hardest. And I think like going into it, day one, I'm like very hyperactive, and I'm always like agitated. Like after 7 p.m. because I'm tired and like all those sudden noises and sudden, like, then I'm much more like irritable at that hour. So
yeah, me too.
You don't sleep as much either when you're doing that fast for some reason. You have tons of energy and you have to like keep yourself occupied to stay away from food. So
it's funny when I do like a full day fast, I do the intermittent fasting, but when I do like, mm-hmm. I'm so tired. All I want to do is just rest. I just want to rest. Well, again, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Amazeballs, honey. All right, let's get into the medical news of the week.
Woohoo.
New research links not sleeping well to dementia. According to the Journal of Neurology, Neurosurgery, and Psychiatry, older adults who have sleep issues have nearly a 30% increased risk of developing dementia. The data show that people with insomnia, that's when you have difficulty falling asleep and or staying asleep, at a 27% increased risk of developing dementia. Those with sleep inadequacy, which is when you're not getting enough sleep in general, were 25% more likely to develop dementia. People who deal with sleep inefficiency, that is when you spend too much time awake in bed, had a 24% higher risk of dementia. And those with sleep apnea, this kid, listen to this, that's the serious sleep disorder where breathing stops and starts at night, had a 29% higher risk of memory loss.
Yikes.
So we are an overstimulated society. So I'm sure hardly any of us are getting enough sleep because we've got late night TV, midnight snacks, working,
yes,
stress, smartphones, addictive apps. Let me tell you, I'm willing to bet that Pfizer's drug Aduhelm is poised to make a killing as Gen Xers and millennials get older.
Ooh, what's that drug?
The Aduhelm, that's the Alzheimer's drug.
Yes. Now I remember.
Is Lilly coming out with one as well? Well, I think these companies are poised to make a killing off of a sleep-deprived nation. How much sleep do you guys get?
Well, I have pretty bad sleep apnea with hypoxia too. So I've been on my CPAP machine. I have a CPAP and I love that thing. I call it my husband because I cannot function if I don't have that. I have a mouth guard. I have a sleep. I mean, you should see this thing. I look like a fighter pilot when I go to bed and it's like a full face mask. And I hopefully try to get, and I have to take sleep medicine every night. And my neurologist was okay with it. Like normally they dissuade people from doing it because it does have like, in the long run, it's not a good thing. But he said in my case, because I clearly have like lifelong insomnia combined with sleep apnea, that I need to take it. And he just allows it. So I try to get 7 to 8 hours and I'm no good with less than six. And but it really matters. I'm really vigilant now about getting to sleep early. I don't stay up late anymore, but I do wake up during the night like a lot of other people of a certain age. Okay. In the middle of the night, I wake up and I look at my phone and read and then go back to sleep.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that happens every night.
Well, that's not a straight 8 hours. That's like broken up sleep.
Oh no, I've never had straight 8 hours. I can count on my hand the amount of times where I've like gone to bed and then woken up and like there was no interruption during the night. Ever since I was a kid, that's just how it is. It's just sleep phase, the whole deal. I got all of it. So yeah, let's hope. Fingers crossed.
Let's hope you're not a candidate for Adjuhelm.
Yes.
Yes.
How about you guys?
I make sure that I get a minimum of 7 hours.
Oh, are you able to get that?
Yeah. I mean,
are you saying you don't wake up during the night and toss and turn?
I don't wake up at all during the night.
Once I
do my little breathing exercise and my head hits that pillow and I put my little blinder on over my eyes, I am out cold.
Oh my gosh. You don't move and talk like, cause I also have, you know, the restless leg cause I have Tourette's, you know, so that's right, all connected. Right. So you don't even shift in your position.
Nope.
Oh, you're going to live forever. You're not going to age.
Well, you know, sometimes I get 6 hours. Like I was going through a period where like my eyes would just like I would just come back to consciousness like after 6 hours. But in general, 7 hours is my, like I'm in bed. I have to get up at 6. So I try to be in bed no later than 11 o'clock. So like my head is on that pillow, 11 o'clock, I'm in that bed. I try to drink minimal fluid so that my bladder doesn't wake me up and stuff like that.
No, I wake up multiple times during the night that way. I forgot about that feature.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
With me, my alarm clock, meaning my prostate, wakes me up. Yeah, of course, this is all going to be edited out. Wakes me up, I would say.
No, it's not.
It wakes me up about every 3 hours.
3 hours, okay.
Yeah, but I have no problems going back to
sleep. Yeah, you get right back to sleep.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, what happens, you know, it's like fluid in, fluid out, or... you know, which makes absolutely no sense. Of course, I'm thirsty, so I drink a glass of water, which then ensures another
drink. You're drinking water at night while you're like,
yes,
you're waking up and drinking water?
And what I've decided is that I use it, and this is really sad, and is absolutely, everybody do not do this. I use it as an alarm clock. Like if I have to wake up in 2 hours, then I just drink an extra big glass of water. I know that'll wake me up, you know, so.
Oh, my.
That's creative thinking, though. That's problem solving.
Very bad advice. That's
extremely bad advice. Yeah. Very special case. It's very interesting.
Yep, and as for bedtime, depends what game is playing or what's on Netflix.
Do you have to watch like TV to go to sleep or read to go to sleep?
I don't have to do either. I put my blinder on and
you can do that. How long does it take you to wind down to go to sleep?
I'm usually pretty tired by the time I get in the bed. Like I start getting sleepy about like 10:30, sometimes 9:30, and you know, like I'll be at my desk working. And then I'll start yawning and start dozing off. And I'm like, ooh, I better just.
So you can put your head down on the pillow and be like, okay, I'm going to go to sleep now and go to sleep.
Yes. So I put my head down on the pillow. I put the blinders on. I tell, you know, the Echo to turn off the lights. And then I'm out until the morning.
You can regulate that way. Wow. Yeah. My whole life, I've never been able to do that. Actually. Yeah. My whole life, I've never been able to just put my head down and go to sleep. It's never happened. Oh boy.
I have just always, well, no, when I was a kid, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't go to sleep. I just lay there for hours and hours and then in the
daytime, I'd be sleepy.
But as an adult, you know, I've grown out of that. So that's very interesting.
That's good news then.
On to the next one. What is a COVID breakthrough infection and what you should do if you get one? The Delta variant of COVID-19 is proving to be much more challenging than other variations of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. It's more easily transmissible, it's 2 times more contagious than other strains, and the incubation period is shorter due to faster viral replication. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, says that as long as COVID is circulating in the community, infections in fully vaccinated people cannot be completely eliminated. This means fully vaccinated people are not only capable of becoming infected, what we now know as breakthrough infection, but there's evidence that even the vaccinated can pass the virus on to others, something that hadn't been seen until the Delta variant came into existence. Of the nearly 20,000 breakthrough infections recorded through September, CDC reports that 86% of those cases ending in death were among adults 65 or older. For breakthrough cases resulting in hospitalization, 69% were in the 65 and older crowd. The people with breakthrough infections were also more likely to be sicker, having 3 or more underlying health conditions. Because of this, CDC recommends that even fully vaccinated people mask up in indoor public spaces in areas where there is substantial or high COVID transmission. Or if you're immune compromised, you should wear your mask even in low COVID transmission areas. Let me tell you, I live in constant fear of bringing the vaccine home to my unvaccinated child. By the way, I made an appointment with her to get her vaccinated as soon as the vaccine drops.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Wow.
So because I worry about this, I always wear a mask. I do other protocols at home too, but now we're talking about like the crunchy granola type remedies that I won't
get. Yes.
I'll go maskless around other vaccinated people, like in a restaurant, but that's about it.
If I okay.
go to a space where vaccination is not enforced, I wear my mask.
Oh, me too. But today at the pool, you have to be vaccinated to swim in that area. And it's only for people doing laps and they have to sign in. So they track you. So that was a little bit, you know, but the rest of the gym, as soon as I'm like out of the dressing room and everything, I'm wearing a mask going in and out and all that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. I think it's common courtesy. I mean,
yeah,
we don't wear like signs or a thing on your chest that says I'm vaccinated, not vaccinated, I'm careful, not careful. So let's just show people that we're careful by just starting and doing what we need to do, which is let's wear a vaccine.
Wear
something that shows that we are health conscious is what I was trying to
say. Ah, yes.
But you know, unvaccinated people think that they're being health conscious by not vaccinating. You know what I mean? Like they think that they're being, so for example, my doula, I'm still, you know, we still keep in touch with her and stuff like that. And she sent me some wild stuff about some group that's going to be suing California Governor Gavin Newsom to prevent the vaccination. It's like this whole thing about, you know, Black people united against the vaccine. Are you kidding me? Black and brown people are dying in droves. You know, Black and brown people have, you know, the highest burden of comorbidities, and this thing is taking them out. What are you talking about? What are you doing? And they're saying that they're concerned because the vaccine is going to give children myocarditis. No, that's not correct. Myocarditis is coming from having the infection, recovering from it, and that's the after effect.
Right.
What are you talking about? This is not the actual virus. I mean, J&J is the weakened virus. But, you know, when you're talking about the mRNA, that's not the virus. That's just the spikes. I mean, what? Anyway. I just simply can't.
I think there's a lot of misinformation out there that, you know, what a breakthrough infection is. A breakthrough infection just really means that you've been vaccinated, you now have the COVID, but it's a lot weaker. In this iteration, the symptoms are a lot weaker. You have a much less chance of catching it.
Meaning when you have when you're vaccinated.
When you're having a breakthrough. If you were not vaccinated, you'd have full blown. But when you're vaccinated, you're having it, but you're having it in a much Your body can fight it off and get rid of it a lot easier if you get it at all. So those are the benefits of being vaccinated. It doesn't mean that you're immune completely or that it's not going to touch you. Something like a
but
lot.
But you
of
look at people like Colin Powell. He had cancer that he was battling, and so he was immune compromised, and he's come to complications. I mean, and that does happen, and he was fully vaccinated, so it's not. It's for sick people and elderly people, it's not a slam dunk, unfortunately, which is all the more reason why people need to get vaccinated. Just put yourself aside.
Yes. And he was a few days short of getting his booster also because he was ill, and he was too ill to get his booster.
Yeah. Now, I just got my booster. I got my booster Sunday night. And for those of you out there that care, I took the Moderna booster. I had mild side effects. I had a bunch of weird things, like my fingers felt like they were tingly. I would have intermittent tiredness. So I'd be tired for an hour, then I'd feel okay, and I'd be tired. I don't know how much of this was psychological and how much of it was real. I think the answer is a little bit of both. But today I'm just as chipper and annoying as ever. So hopefully.
How did you get it? Did you have to go to your regular doctor? Did you go to a clinic?
I got it at the pharmacy. I didn't have First New York said, I had this whole protocol for getting it. This time was a lot easier. I just got the credentials. They told them what I do, and was able to go and just take the vaccine. It was pretty organized. There was a bit of disorganization in the pharmacy, and that disorganization was due to the fact that the New York State deadline was November 1st.
Oh yes.
Care workers.
So I took it the night of the 31st, or the night of Halloween, just to get away from trick or treaters.
And that was smart.
He ran right into the deadline people.
So
I gotta get this for work.
We can't go to work. And some of them were protesting by not wearing masks.
Oh boy.
So the whole pharmacy was just like, okay, just this group over here, that group over there. And then they wanted me to wait after the shot. And I told the pharmacist, I'll wait, but I'm going to wait in my car because I just could not sit around that group or that chaos anymore. They said, fine. So I sat in the car for about 10 minutes and just left.
See, and that's the thing that bothers me. Like, if you don't want to get vaccinated and you don't have to get vaccinated, that's fine. But at least wear a mask.
Just wear a mask. It's just gracious.
You know,
it's good manners.
Exactly. Put yourself aside for a second. Think about the people around you that you know, just because you think that you're healthy and it's not affecting you doesn't mean you can't affect other people. Like, I just wish people would understand that.
Actually, we have to take a break. Or is
yes. Let's take a break. Then we'll come back.
We have to take our first break and we'll come back in a minute or so.
From the Lower Nine to Uptown, Mid-City to the West Bank, we've got you covered, New Orleans. WHIV 102.3 FM.
And we're back.
Is it safe to use saliva as a lubricant?
You just stumbled upon my trigger. I can't stand saliva. Oh my God. Are you trying to torture me?
Maybe just a little. Saliva would seem like a harmless swap for your own natural lubrication.
Oh my God.
Swabble kind. It's always available and free after all. But your vagina, thank you for not resorting to it for three important reasons. Reason number one, STIs can be spread through saliva. Just like with intercourse, if the mouth is infected, the saliva will be infected, and then you'll get infected. Number two, you can get a vaginal infection. The mouth microbiome, we're not talking about STD. We're just talking about the run-of-the-mill stuff. The mouth microbiome is different from the vaginal flora, and spit can disrupt your vaginal flora. So you can get, you know, simple stuff like yeast infections, bacterial vaginosis, the list goes on. And the third one is spit just isn't as good as lube. It doesn't have the glide, which means that you can get microscopic tears that can introduce
micro tears
and introduce harmful microbes into your vagina. I'll be very honest here. I was guilty of this same offense once. Yes, girl. Until I kept popping up with bacterial vaginosis. So finally I put two and two together and I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. This is not going to work. You know, it's also harmful is when you mix anal and vaginal. Ew.
Oh my God. What are you doing to me here? Like,
terrible combination. Our ratings have just gone from PG to R.
And I NC-17. Oh my God.
I'm not saying a word during this session.
He's not walking into that landmine.
I'm just pointing out. And the timekeeper.
I'm just Emmy just pulled a grenade. She pulled the pin on that grenade and just
I just lobbed it.
written up and I'll get my letter. And
yes.
It is chock full of microbes. So I just wanted to point that out as well. Just since we were talking about harmful practices, let's talk about it. All right. We know where you stand. You know, it's one of your triggers.
It's one of my triggers. Saliva to me is the germiest thing on earth. I can't watch people brush their teeth in commercials. Unless they, you know, I'm so glad they stopped doing that. They don't do that with them where they show the toothpaste. I can't be around. When I took a lot of microbiology courses and we had to handle slides, and one of the slides was like gonorrhea. And I was like, oh my God, like I just was just, like everything. Oh my God. When I think that people think they just really underestimate how gross plain old saliva is, how much is just sitting in there. That's my number one trigger, I would say. Saliva and all its ilk.
Did you say that you don't like to see people brush their teeth?
I don't like to see people brush their teeth.
That is so interesting because my little one, she doesn't like that either. She doesn't even like to see herself brush her own teeth, which was, you know, it was, so even me brushing her teeth for her, like I would put my mask on. I remember we talked about this. I put my mask on and brush it for that was very stressful for her, extremely stressful. And she just
is it the toothpaste and the whole foaming?
No, it's seeing her teeth. She doesn't want to see her teeth. She finds it disgusting. She doesn't want to see other people's teeth. She finds it disgusting. So
fact that you wore a mask, did that help?
No, it didn't, because it had to do with, she didn't even want to lift her lip to expose her teeth because.
So it has to do with that. It's not about proximity to somebody else.
No, it's about seeing the teeth, even in her mind's eye. She doesn't want to see it. She doesn't want to see it in the mirror. She doesn't want to see she doesn't want to see anyone else's teeth. She just can't tell.
Does she dislike watching other people eat?
Yes, she finds it disgusting. So what I found was this U-shaped toothbrush. I know this is like a weird
thing. That's interesting.
Yeah, so what happens is she puts the toothpaste on it, then she puts her teeth inside of it. So it's kind of like a tray. You put your teeth in the top and the bottom, and then you just kind of shake it back and forth. You don't see your teeth at all. And then you pull it out and then your teeth are clean. I'll send you a picture of it.
I love that already.
So interesting. They have them for adults too. But I found that. And now when I say, go brush your teeth, she brushes her teeth. She never had a problem with the act, because like all her other teeth would be pristine and then her front teeth would be like ghastly.
That's so interesting. It was about the one she could see.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's the one she could see. The other teeth were perfect. And then her front teeth, which had all this buildup because she just couldn't bring herself to look.
We don't get to pick our little triggers.
I know. Thank goodness I found that toothbrush. And so now she feels like a normal child again. And she's not stressing about her losing her teeth, because I would say, do you want to lose your teeth?
Oh, does that work? I don't know. Sometimes they're like, I'll stand up for it. I'm okay.
But that's when I realized that it was really a problem, because she,
it was much more, it wasn't a phase. Yeah.
She recognized that she doesn't want her teeth to be that way, but she just couldn't help it. It would just
right
to tears. And then she'd be like, no. And she'd act like you were torturing her. No, please.
Oh, poor kid.
Oh, anyway, now that I've got that U-shaped toothbrush for her, brushing is a pleasure again. And her teeth look amazing. I'm so happy.
Very good.
You're not off the hook.
No,
by the way,
me. I'm here doing research.
I'm here to say people should be more paranoid about saliva. I don't know why people have there's so much stuff in there.
Comes from your body. Yeah. And also a lot of those adults.
And also people don't know what's clean and what's not clean. They really like, I'm clean. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Clean
stuff is different.
Yeah.
I guess depending
and,
on
and
what
the other into. Issue with spit is it doesn't affect men the same way it affects women. The
it article doesn't.
Is it safe okay. for women? It doesn't say anything about whether it's safe for men. And you know what? Because it doesn't have the same effect on men that it does on women, men
it's
tend
perfectly
to be
all right.
Perfectly okay.
It works for them. That's fine.
Okay, that's really all
and
that matters.
And yeah, and that's why. We should not. We should all take a stand and be like, no, saliva, no, saliva.
Listen, saliva. Bottom line, nobody should date me. I'm very high maintenance. You have to play by my rules. And that includes saliva and all my rules. So I'm not worth the effort, and I'm just fine with it.
If you listen to all our shows, you get every single pet peeve.
Well, so Lou, where do you stand on this? The saliva thing.
God.
As long as they're not looking, you know, you might sneak some in, but I would.
Oh my God! I'm never going on a date.
That's gross.
You guys are anti salivers. You know.
That's
I'm an anti saliver.
I'm a reformed anti saliver.
Anyway, with that,
my blood pressure just went through the roof.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Frenchman to Oak Street, Tremaine, Gentilly, and the CBD. V102.3, WHIV-FM, the vibe of the city for human rights and social justice. WHIV, 102.3 FM.
And we're back.
And we're back. And
back.
On to this week's topic. Is the standard American diet killing us? Okay. Multiple studies on a typical Western diet or the standard American diet or SAD have linked it to adverse reactions in the bodies, including cancer, sepsis, and chronic gut infections. A new study suggests that a Western diet may also have a negative effect on the brain, leading to cognitive decline and neurodegenerative issues. The researchers believe their findings may also offer potential therapies for the treatment of neurodegenerative disorders such as Alzheimer's disease. A typical Western diet, by the way, is what health experts refer to as the standard American diet, which includes greater amounts of food with higher calories, which I'm going to contest that in a second, and fat percentages and lower nutritional value. So when they talk about calories, first of all, let's just be clear. We're not talking about regular calories, like an apple has calories, but it's very nutrient dense. So, you know, you wouldn't count the calories of an apple, let's say, for example. Empty calories like sugar and processed foods where there's like zero nutritional value and all you get is calories. That's specifically what we're talking about. And then when they say fat, there's two kinds of fat. There's the polyunsaturated fat, and then you have the monounsaturated fat. Those are good fats. The other stuff, the trans fats, those are not.
Those deep fried foods, that's trans fat.
Right.
You think?
Right. So basically, we're talking about polyunsaturated fats, which are the fats that are not as the monounsaturated fats. So we have to be very clear when we talk about fats like butter and stuff like that are perfect. And lard. Those are things that we've always used, you know, and coconut oil. These are things that we've always used for generations and have not had the level of disease that we now have. It's because we've got like these really strange, highly processed oil.
Highly processed, shelf stable.
Right. That's the stuff that when they say fat, they should really be clear. Okay. So in any event, that's my big pet peeve that they're not clear because they say calorie and fat, but they don't really specify what kind of calories, what kind of fat. That's a really important.
So you're saying processed.
Right. Processed, highly processed, where it's just like, it's so unrecognizable to the body that it's the body's just like, let's just store it as fat. We don't know what this is. Let's just get this out of here.
You know that old joke about Twinkies, right?
No. What's the old joke about Twinkies?
Why is it that a Twinkie doesn't go stale? Because it was never fresh. That's what I like.
I get it.
So yeah, processed bad. Okay.
Oh my God. Well, that's so basically, yeah. So your Twinkie, and sorry to call out a particular food item, but would be an example of something in the American
super processed.
Diet but that's highly processed because it's highly processed.
Right.
Whatever the filling is in the center, it's not cream.
Yeah, a Twinkie never goes stale. You could put it on the wall and it will stay like that.
And
for
a lot
about
of these
years.
Fast food burger buns
will not go stale.
Even mold won't eat it. I mean,
oh, what? Hey, I'll tell you what, when a French fry gets lost in your car, like going through the drive-through, it looks about the same. Like
it
3 weeks
about
later,
the same when you find it weeks later.
That yes,
exactly right. That's exactly right. And that,
I've been kidding, eating my kid too many of those.
Yeah. This is the only industrialized country though that allows adulterated food into our food supply. And also, you know, the commercials for the fast food all hours of the day and night.
Oh yeah.
And I think we're like even the only country to allow advertising to small children of like high sugar, heavily processed foods, you can't even call them foods. And is it any wonder that younger and younger people are developing cancer much earlier? I have to share this story.
Would they have any advertisers, by the way, if they didn't have fast food advertisers?
I mean, they'd probably find other things, but they can pay the prices. More money.
But here's the thing. Is this like an economic thing? Because, you know, you can stand in a supermarket and have a cart full of food for your family, let's say, and it's going to cost you $200. But if you're going to go organic, it might cost you $350. You know, a healthy, if you're going calorie, you know, pound for pound, as they say in boxing, but if you go pound for pound in food, the healthy stuff is usually a 20, and this is here.
A lot more expensive, yes.
It's a 25 to 50% premium on non-healthy stuff. So
not much, wow.
I can feed the calories. I can give them the calories and keep everybody from saying, I'm hungry.
Yes.
$200, but to feed somebody in a healthy manner, that's going to cost a lot more. And the same thing goes for restaurants, I feel, anyway.
But can I just say that of all the things, and maybe you can call me elitist or whatever you want to call me, but of all the things that in life you should spend money on, I would think that, and I get that you get less food for the same money. Like I've literally stood next to people in the supermarket. Well, like I pick up the organic stuff, let's say, for example. And you know, they'll be looking at the organic and the non-organic, looking at the price. And they'll always go for the non-organic because it's like a third of the price.
Yes.
And to them, it's the same thing. A lot of it is people just don't know. And again, I'm going to risk sounding like a little bit of an elitist, but of all the things to spend your money on in life, you should spend your money on food.
Because it's your health. That's what we're learning.
Because it's your health and it's your longevity. You know what's really expensive? Healthcare is really expensive, and it's not as effective as eating the right things to begin with. And I know that's easier for me to say, but I think that if more people really understood just how adulterated our food supply is here in this country, they would make, I think it's just a matter of education and prioritizing, you know? Like, you could spend your money on food, or you could spend your money on travel and entertainment or something like that. I just think that more people, I think in general, people like quality. I think they don't know what quality is. If you know what quality is and you understand what's going on, I'm not really sure. But I would think that the easier choice, if you have the information, is to go with the healthier. And you don't have to pay organic prices. There's like little, you could eat local.
Yeah, there's also certain things that certain foods don't necessarily need to be organic, like, you know, like avocados or melons. They don't necessarily need to be.
They don't necessarily need to be. Right. But I would say, given the choice between buying it in the supermarket and buying it from like your local.
Oh, yeah.
Your local farmer, you know, or your person who has like, you know, you go to the farmer's market, that stuff is going to be higher in nutritional value and less processed, and the pesticides are going to be less scary than if you go and you buy them at the supermarket. Because look, a lot of people can't afford Whole Foods, you know,
that's so true.
But that doesn't mean that you can't eat well. You can eat well. You don't have to spend your whole paycheck, which is the nickname for Whole Foods, whole paycheck.
Whole paycheck.
You don't have to spend your money there. You can go to like local sources and save money that way. You know, you can do food co-ops.
What are the food deserts like in New York? There's a lot of food deserts in New York, aren't there?
But again, the
food markets are coming up though, right? The farmers markets are really.
That's the thing. You have to be willing to travel a little. And
okay.
You know, I think if you make it, here's the thing, right? I see people online at like 6 o'clock in the morning, waiting for like the next, you know, designer sneaker to drop.
Yes. Yeah, have your priority. You want to look good in those.
Fried chicken when we were having
Oh my God.
The lines to for the Popeyes, you know, Popeyes sandwich versus I don't even remember who it was against. It was chain. I can't remember the name of it. Chick-fil-A. Versus Popeyes.
Popeyes.
And the lines, you would think people were like waiting to vote. And I would see those lines like, I hope that.
And it was right around election time when people were complaining about lines.
I hope
that's so hilarious.
And the thing is, it's
about. I can see that's also an activity. And yeah, okay. So every once in a while, there's going to be a time where you're going to eat the wrong thing. But yeah, I agree. Eat your quality food. Eat whole food unprocessed as much as possible.
You know, you should care as much about your food as you do about your.
Yes.
You should care as much about your food as you do about your phone. You should care as much about what you put inside your body as what you do to the outside of your body.
Yeah, and if you want to rephrase it as a way of vanity, the healthier your intake of food, the healthier, the better you're going to look.
You're going to look better. Yeah. You can look younger. You're going to feel better. You won't have to spend as much money on cosmetic procedures to get, you know, like facials and peels and all that other stuff to like resurface your skin, because you're not going to be breaking out. You're going to naturally have a glow. I'm just saying, it's just a matter of priority. And I think we have done a terrible job.
And we have, you're right. We've also become habituated to cheap food.
Yes.
That really is a huge portion. My European relatives, like they have the attitude of like, they don't expect food to be inexpensive. Like that's a viable thing. That's a legitimate thing to spend your money on. Right, would be
exactly.
Food.
And here it's like, oh no, that's too much money.
Yeah.
And okay, it's a little more money, but what do you get for that? You know,
right.
People don't see the people don't see the, like with a pair of sneakers, for example, you get to wear them, or with a handbag, you know, a designer handbag, you get to wear it, you get to, you know, people can see it, you feel rich, all this other stuff, you know, that's external. People need to, I think people need to learn that eating clean.
Yes.
Like that's the, what is it called? When you wear one of those little cloth bags from like PBS or what is that called? Value.
Oh, like a virtue, social signifier?
Virtue signaling.
Ah.
It's a new virtue signaling. You know, when you eat healthy. So I'm just saying, I'm just putting that out there. And I recognize that not everybody has the same point, but I think a lot of people just don't know. And I think we've done a terrible job in this country of educating people. So I just want to read this article that I came across in the Insider. And this just speaks to kind of what I'm talking about. So this woman, her name is Shante Drakeford. She's 37 and she's a nurse practitioner. She said that she has stage 4 breast cancer. Oh. And keep in mind, she's 37 years old.
Wow.
She had symptoms when she was 25, but doctors told her she was too young for a diagnosis.
Oh. Okay?
By the time they diagnosed her 13 years later, it had metastasized to her lungs, her spine, her ribs, and her hips. Okay, listen to this.
Oh.
I had my first symptom of breast cancer when I was 25 years old. As a nurse, I knew that the nipple discharge I was experiencing wasn't normal. I went to the doctor, but I was told not to worry about it. I was too young for breast cancer. Come back if the discharge becomes bloody, they said. Over the next 6 years, her symptoms escalated. She said, but still my treatment was either denied or delayed. I had painful periods and more nipple discharge. I was diagnosed with a dilated breast duct, but told it wasn't anything to be concerned about. Things kept getting worse and my symptoms were downplayed. I developed cysts in my breast. One cyst was larger. I could feel it with my finger, so I asked for a mammogram. My doctor said no. Again, I was told I was too young. They believed it was a benign cyst anyway. Eventually, I had surgery to remove the dilated breast duct. Doctors could have biopsied my cyst during that surgery, but they chose not to. By the way, now the policy is biopsy it anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. Even if you think it's benign, biopsy it anyway to be sure. So that's
okay.
That has changed. For almost a year after that surgery, that cyst gave me really, really intense pain. It became hard. Again, I went to the doctor and again, I was told it wasn't anything to worry about. It was just scar tissue, they said. During this time, she moved about and then she ended up going to Walter Reed. She's an army wife.
I bet. Okay.
Army wife. And that's where she finally got diagnosed. All at once, I received the tests I had been requesting for years, an MRI, a mammogram, an ultrasound, and a biopsy. The results confirmed that I had cancer. My doctor screened my entire body and found that cancer had already spread to my ribs, spine.
Oh.
I had stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. I asked my doctor if I had not done enough. I felt like I did what I was supposed to do. I paid attention to my body. I went to the doctor every time I was concerned. I asked for all the tests. My doctor told me I did everything right. I just slipped through the cracks of the system.
Ugh.
Slipped through the cracks of the system.
Ugh.
Don't get started on. So her thing is she's like, she's blaming herself a little. And then she's like saying, you know, is it because she was young or is it because she's Black? And I think it's both, but I think it's much more because she's young.
Young.
Because we're seeing story after story after story after story of these young women who are being turned away by doctors.
Yes. They don't fit the profile.
Nothing to worry. Yeah, exactly. You don't fit the profile. What is going on? How do we get through to doctors? What do we have to do and say? And I wonder, is this happening to young men too? I'd be curious to, I'm going to start looking into that. Are young men experiencing the same thing? Like if a young man goes in and say, my testicles are hurting, does the doctor say, it's probably an STD, don't worry about it? Or do they drop a bunch of tests? I wonder.
Hmm.
But it just seems like every time I turn around, these young women are being turned away because of implicit bias by these doctors that, no, she's too young. No, she doesn't. Why aren't they getting the memo? I don't understand this. So, but then this goes back and ties back into what I was talking about with our food supply. Remember, I was saying that children born after 1990 are at higher risk than any other generation for developing cancer younger.
Oh.
And this is why the question is, you know, is the standard American diet killing us?
Well, you know, studies have shown that the healthiest diet is the Mediterranean diet.
How many of us know what the Mediterranean diet is? You know what it is. I know what it is.
I know what it is. Yeah, but
people know what it is. No, people don't know what the Mediterranean diet is.
But one of the things that we have to look at is that where the, let's call it the American diet, varies from the Mediterranean diet quite heavily is in the amount of meat that we eat, which is a lot.
Yeah. I propose that the standard American diet has become much more processed than it was way back. Right. It's not even the same. The standard American diet now, yeah.
So first of all, there's a lot of meat. Second, almost all the food is processed. Very little of the portions are you know, salads or things of that. If you take it again, as I said before, pound for pound, we're taking a lot more meat. We're taking a lot more processed foods. And I think in some instances, our wealth is keeping us healthy longer, or our good healthcare system is keeping us healthy or alive longer.
I don't know about that. Go ahead.
To a point, yeah.
But at what condition? Okay, we're alive, but we got more diabetes, we got more this, we got more obesity than anybody else.
Yeah, that's the diseases of abundance Exactly. Yeah, those are, yeah. So exactly. We're having, and those are diseases of complications too. That's what's really killing us, heart disease, et cetera. Right. Wow.
But I would argue that it's not just abundance in that sense, because if you ask a lot of obese people, they will tell you, I don't even eat that much. It's the quality of
the quality of the food.
Right. It's the quality of the food that they're eating. They're eating food that's pumped full of antibiotics and hormones,
endocrine disruptors,
and you have fruits and vegetables that are not as nutritious as they used to be.
Yeah, that's right. The plant, they're not as nutritious as they used to be.
That's the GMO, the genetically modified, stuff going on with a lot of this stuff too. So the banana that you're eating is not the banana that you got 20 years ago. You know, because its genes have been spliced with something to ward off pests, you know, or something like that. But it just doesn't have the same nutrient density. I mean, it's better than eating nothing. It's better than eating meat. But it's not that our diet is so meat heavy. It is. But our American diet has always been meat heavy. But
but you know what? Also, it's not grass fed. Beet heavy.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The livestock and, you know, and the
factory farmed.
They
extra processed.
Exactly. Mm. They're not even raised on the foods that they and you're eating. Right. Stuff. Don't think that stuff cooks away. It's part of their body, and you're eating that, and that becomes part of your body too. Right, so,
but our diet is not local. Meaning, if you look at the if you look at the Mediterranean diet, or even, you know, places in Asia, a lot of the food that they eat is stuff that grows within 50 miles from them.
Right.
I would say the majority of the food, whether it's a fish or a goat or a cow or whatever.
It's definitely globalization. It's something that
if we look at what we're eating here, that bananas from Costa Rica.
From Mexico.
The mangoes from Mexico. The other thing is from some canned Iowa.
Beef is from Brazil.
You know, if it's in a can, it's been hanging there for, you know, it has to hang in the shelf for 6 months.
And don't get me started on nitrates and nitrites, you know, the pure. You can't even eat a hot dog anymore because, you know, that'll put you 6 feet under quickly. You know, it is the globalist. You're absolutely right. And that's why I was saying that you don't have to spend your whole paycheck and go organic. if you just eat local, if you have a backyard, you know, and you turn over the soil a little, you can make like, or you can buy like a box and you can like grow some of, like my dad, you know, grows his own cucumbers.
Ooh, delicious.
What else does he grow back there? He grows,
my parents grew tomatoes and their thing is delicious.
He grows tomatoes. Yeah, he grows all of that stuff in his backyard.
Oh my gosh, that must be so tasty.
They grow okra. You know, they grow all kinds of stuff back there. And I just go with my shopping bag and I'm just.
That's like, awesome.
Yeah, next day, it's like Christmas here. You'll see. Everybody gets a cucumber. Everybody gets a.
No, I'm like giving everyone, I'm like, hey, would you like some cucumber? I grew it. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, there are things that this is not impossible, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
it's going to take a little bit of effort, but I'm just saying that, you know, for the people that are willing to stand online for sneakers or Popeye's chicken or the latest, you know, iPhone or whatever, you can take that same stick-to-itiveness and you can go down, travel a little extra, go to another neighborhood, go to the farmer's market. Maybe you don't, maybe your neighborhood is a food desert. All right, take the bus or take, you know, a car service and go to the next neighborhood with your bags and pick up, you know, local produce. It's not expensive, I promise you. Join a local food co-op.
Ooh, good idea.
Work, you know, and then in exchange, you get very cheap, locally grown produce and meats and stuff like that. You know, have a relationship with your neighborhood butcher. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, my mom, she didn't go to the supermarket to buy meat. We went to the butcher shop.
And so you really knew the source of your food.
Right, exactly. And we've moved away from that
so
far. Mm-hmm. And I just want us to come back. And I want us to really think about, don't just think about what you look like on the outside. Think about how the inside reflects on the outside. Yeah.
The one thing I would throw out, and this is, some people are just not going to do this because it is a bit of work, but keep maybe like a food diary or plan your week out in advance of what you're going to eat.
That's a good idea.
Say like, okay,
yeah,
let me just get a sheet of paper, and on Monday I'm going to have fish, and then from that say, okay, what's going to go with the fish? Okay, I'm going to make it with asparagus and blah blah. And then get the healthy ingredients for that. And then on Tuesday is a
meat-free day. Oh, you can plan your menu.
Yeah, there's online guides to plan your menu for the week.
And then, you know what? And then if on Sunday you're going to hang out with your friends and you're going to have a steak or whatever at a tailgate or whatever, put that in. And then just remember that, okay, that's what I did on Sunday. Or maybe a big night is Friday night pizza where you don't feel like eating it. That's okay. You know, okay, so I cheat one day a week. And
that makes it sustainable if you every once in a while have a little break. Yeah,
exactly. Because that way it's planned and you don't cheat on the other days. And then you can start doing that. And then that.
But we should really move away from that language of cheating, because it denotes that, you know, that you're doing something bad. And having a steak in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's just that doing it every day will eventually be bad for your health. Anyway, the point is I just want people to understand that you have choices. I mean, I don't know what to say about this woman's situation. I my heart just absolutely
awful, just awful.
I just want people to protect themselves and start thinking about your body in terms of that can be you, but for the grace of God, there go I.
That's right.
And just start thinking about like, okay, this is not my story today, but this could be my story. What am I going to do? I've got to do everything in my power that I can do. Look, at the end of the day, we've got to move away from this paradigm that the doctor is the be all, the end all. All right. You are the master, the mistress of your own health and your own body and your own destiny. And you have the power to put yourself back on the right track and save yourself from this. And I'm just begging people to please, you know, take care of your health, because nobody is going to do it for you. No one.
You're here.
Yeah.
All right.
That's all the time we have for.
Bravo.
And thank you for listening to Urban Health Weekly. And I'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Urban Health Weekly today. I hope you'll join me and my friends next week so you can stay informed and inspired to take control of your health. See you next time.